Hey, beautiful. This is Aminata Soul Plant Walker Firewoman, and I am the host of the Mother Tree Network, where spirituality and earth wisdom meet racial justice and women's leadership.
Hey, gorgeous. Aminata Soul Plant Walker Firewoman here, and I want to share with you, as part of the introduction to this episode, where I interview Tiger Blair, a beautiful restorative justice and plant medicine healer. Before I say more about Tiger, though, I want you to know that I had a experience in Martha's Vineyard where I wrote to my mom, who has passed away almost 30 years now, and what she said back to me, this is one of the ways I communicate, is by writing. You know, I light a candle, I'll have a plant ally or plant friend sitting close to me. I'll drink some good water. I will breathe into my heart, and then I will start journaling. So I wrote to my mom, and what I heard back from her, I want to share with you. She said, change happens one day at a time. It's absurd to think that it's just one great moment like the March on Washington. Think of the mushroom and mycelium. A few mushrooms are the fruit bodies of miles of mycelium growing underground, unseen. Do the unseen work, and the seen will emerge naturally when and where it's safe and good and right timing to emerge and be seen. I wanted to share that with you because if you're like me, you might be getting a lot of messages to slow down. Maybe it's your body, maybe it's your spirit, maybe it's your family asking you, but it's saying slow down, slow down. And you might feel distrustful of it, or you might wonder how we're going to get any justice if everybody slows down. And what I want you to know is that deeper than social justice, beneath social justice, is the vibration of truth. And that is what we each need to sink down into, find, and act from there. So if you're doing the wrong thing, if you're doing the right thing, but you're the wrong person to be doing it, it's not going to have the impact it's supposed to have. If you're doing if you're trying to be good and show up where you think you should show up, as opposed to sinking down into the truth of what you need to be doing, which may be unseen by the public. It might be spiritual. It might be healing your body. It might be regenerating with nature. If it's time for you to do that and you resist doing it, it's like you invite imbalance into your life. You invite resentment. You invite illness. You invite irritation, overeating, undereating, overdrinking. I mean, it all goes out of balance when we're not synced into the vibration of truth. And I'm saying this not from the point of view of a superior. I'm saying this from the point of view of someone who is day to day remembering this and day to day trusting this truth, trusting this advice from my mother. So if it resonates with you, I invite you to download the 5 signs it's time to slow down. It will be on the show notes. I invite you to send me an email if you want some support, Amanda@dramandakemp.com, Amanda@dramandakemp.com, if you want some support. And get on my email list. Just get on my email list, as I'm going to be sending messages like this with practices you can do to sink down to the vibration of truth and slow down so that you can find it. All right, enough of that. Now let's go to Tiger Blair, one of my favorite people, and you will hear why when he opens his mouth and you hear that beautiful voice come through. So Tiger is a former Actors Equity actor, singer. He was born in Chicago, but spent his teenage years in Ashland, Oregon. So moved from a very black world to a very white world. And over the course of his young life when he was a young man, and has since moved into the area of restorative justice and spiritual healing assisted by plant medicines and other indigenous technologies. He is based in the Bay Area of California and is one of my, I call him one of my plant brothers, tree brothers, because we both have this affinity for trees and this incredible love for each other. So please listen in as Tiger talks to us about what it's like to reconcile or harmonize your Irish, Black, and Indigenous ancestry, what it's like to inherit generational trauma from your people and transmute it and heal it. Tiger and I both have this, we have this very interesting connection to Bridget, who is a Irish goddess and a and in the Catholic Church, part of the saintly group. And you'll find out more about that. And I think you'll enjoy this very mature, humble leader who is allowing himself to rest in questions right now and to not have all the answers and tell everybody else what to do. He is for sure an elder who is in a very wise, elevated state. You'll feel his energy. It's very slow. As he is watching and feeling his way through this dimension of reality. What a fun, deep conversation you're in for. Without further ado, Tiger Blair. Welcome, everyone, to the Mother Tree Network. I am your host, Amanda Aminata, Soul Plant Walker Fire Woman. And I have with me today my friend, my brother, fellow plant walker, tree man, leader, healer, Tiger Blair. Hey, Tiger.
Hello, doctor. How are you?
I am good. And I, if you, you know,
I guess
you
I'm going to go with tree woman today. That's what I want to go with. Tree woman.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yes, you can call me tree woman. Yes. Okay. And for y'all who can't see me, I have a big smile on my face because ever since I've known about Tiger and come to know him and love him and appreciate him and trust him, I just really like him. So I'm so happy to see you. See that you are well.
I am well and happy to be here.
Yeah. So we start off every show with the question, what's good? So what's good in your body? What's good today? What's good in the world? Any way you want to answer it. What's good today, Tiger?
What's good today? I mean, it's something that's lingering. I arrived here in Colorado on Sunday, late morning. And a friend whisked me off to the Boulder area into a place called Idaho Springs. And because it had been, I got up so early to get on the flight at 6 o'clock in the morning, I was just tired and I fell asleep. And when I woke up, I was in Colorado Springs and I was in the canyons. We were driving to a lake that is there. And I really just felt, wow, how beautiful this is. And, I didn't know that I was a mountainous person. I should know. I'm a Capricorn. So the goat is my, my animal as that Capricorn. But I loved those mountains, and that has just really sat with me through this conference I'm in this week, that those mountains that were surrounding me that were just so incredibly beautiful. So that's what I'm good with. I forget sometimes that nature is so important to me because I'm dwelling in this, in these cities, these metropolitan areas. But I really, really loved being in those canyons, in those mountains in Idaho Springs, so Colorado. So that's what's good. Mm. And I'm going to say this too. We just before we started recording, I was speaking about the documentary that was premiered yesterday called A Table of Our Own. And I'm always unsure how I'm going when I'm being filmed, like, and I don't remember what I've said. I wonder, what did you say? What happened? And yesterday I saw the film and I heard what I said, and I'm rarely comfortable and happy with what I've said, but what's good for me is I said something and some things that I am really proud that I said out loud. So I'm really good with that.
Mm. Wow. That is huge. You know, when we can hear ourselves play back to ourselves, and what we say is, yes, I'm proud of that. Yes, that is me.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. Wow. I've been wondering if you were at this conference that I've been hearing about. You are there, and is it called the Science of Psychedelics, or what is it called?
So it's called MAPS Psychedelic Science Conference 2023, and MAPS is the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. That's the home organization in California, and they do this big conference every year, and this year is in Denver.
Mm. And the film that you are being featured in, you said A Table of Our Own?
A Table of Our Own, which is about Black people across the country that have been doing psychedelic work and developing our own ways, our own pathway to it, since many of us don't feel that we have found an inroad in the majority white spaces that psychedelic work is happening and more recently burgeoning in again. So A Table of Our Own is the way that Black people do it and how we've been doing some sort of roots since we've been on this land and long before that, but how that's incorporated into now what is being called psychedelics and plant medicine.
Right. I love that you took a step back from this current incarnation as where it's called psychedelic plant medicine and saying, hey, but we've had access to this. This has been part of what we've done on this planet. Before it had there was this term for it.
Right.
And one of the reasons I like that is because I think I've heard Tony Moss speak to this too, who's another leader in the space, Black man.
And he's in the film.
Okay, great. And he's a fabulous musician.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. Anybody who has not heard the album Bird Tribe, it's an album called Birds of Paradise, I believe. And the group is called Bird Tribe, but it's led by him.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to it all the time. And there's a song that he has by himself that's called Grateful. Have you heard that one, Tiger?
I have heard it, yeah.
It's like, you know, when I need to shift or when I wake up with it on my mind, you know, I play that song. So Tony Moss, shout out to you. And thank you for your medicine. We're here with my friend Tiger. And I wanted to ask you, Tiger, because you have such a resonant, beautiful voice.
Hmm. Thank you.
You do, yeah. And I feel like you have an arts background. Could you speak to that a little bit before we get more into a table of our own?
Well, your feeling is absolutely correct. There is an arts background. And as I even do the work that I do today, I say that a lot of the trainings that I'm doing today are modeled after the theater training that I got from a young person. So my mother was a singer. She was a classical singer. And then her first cousin, his name is Keith. He was an actor and a musical theater performer. And those two, at some point in my life, had been parents. My mother, up until the time I was 14 or 15, and then Keith took over parenting at 16. And at that time, he was an actor at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in Ashland, Oregon.
Wow.
And my brother and I moved to Ashland. And that's when we really got steeped in the whole world of theater. He would come and take us to theatrical productions when we were younger beings and when we were in Chicago. But then we moved to Ashland, Oregon. Theater became a big part, and really my way of understanding how I was going to be a shapeshifter in this world. Those theater artists showed me how to do that. So even though I was going on thinking I was going to be some sort of diplomat, because I became an exchange student right after I moved to Ashland and to Japan. And I thought diplomacy was going to be the way that I was going to go. But what has turned out is it's really been this way that those theater artists taught me how to be in the world, how to purport, how to speak, how to influence, I guess, with this voice. And then because my mother had been such a singer and a bit of a ham at it, I wouldn't sing for the longest time. And then I got to college and I went to an audition for getting a singing coach. And they somehow conveyed to me that I had some ability. And so from that point on, I started to study this voice as a how I would sing with it. And I've been singing since then. Yeah.
Tiger, I did not know that. I think I knew. You know what I mean? Especially singing. I mean, because I knew you. My feel from you is that, yeah, this man is definitely has an actor background. Mm-hmm. But wow.
It was mostly musical theater I did when I was acting. So I did become a professional actor with Actors Equity, and it was through musical theater that happened.
In the Bay Area, in California?
In the Bay Area, yeah. So when I moved to the Bay Area is when I started to really sing. And then because the theater was also there, it was just natural that I started doing musical theater. And I started doing musical theater out here and became a member of Actors Equity. And now I haven't been doing that for a while, but it is definitely a part of who I am. Mm. Yeah. Mm.
And, you know, the voice is so powerful as a transmitter and as a, you know, I had a teacher once and she was getting mad at me. Nana Sakara, may she rest in peace. She also, by the way, was a student of Maladoma Somme. Mm-hmm. But more like a contemporary. They were more like in similar age group. Mm-hmm. And she used to get mad at me sometimes because I was like, well, something about paper. I don't know. I was like, well, you said on the paper, you know, when I was in one of her classes, she said, stop talking to me about paper. She said, don't you know the power is in oral transmission?
Mm.
And I was like, mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes. There's a right. Remember the oral, the power of the voice.
Right. The power of the voice. Yeah. I think the biggest gift that I'm most appreciative of is this voice that I have, because it's also the one that is mentioned most often. Sometimes when I hear myself, so if I had to hear this back, I'm horrified to hear my voice. But really the thing that is mentioned the most in my life of when someone acknowledges something about me is the voice. They're like, that I know your voice. I hear your voice. And so my sense of that is that this is what I was given by the goddess to use as one of my key abilities is how I use the voice. And what I'm learning more now lately is how I use the voice in a way that is loving, nurturing, holding, as opposed to what I think we learn in Western system education, which is to more use it like in some sort of authoritative fashion. And it's not that I don't have that, but I do know the distinction of using it as a healer, as opposed to using it as some sort of general.
Yeah. So. I love what you said about using the voice as a holder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think one of the things that she was communicating to me was your voice, you know, your voice is vibration. Mm-hmm. So it's not just what you say. It's the vibration of it as it is, right. You know, moving through your particular vessel.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned the divine mother, divine goddess. And and you have such a rich masculine voice. You know, so it's such a beautiful container, I feel, for the divine feminine to feel safe.
Yeah.
When there's this like rich voice that's holding so gently.
Absolutely. And interesting enough, how I hold this voice in me even is that I am a manifestation of the larger divine feminine. And this is a part of her masculine presentation.
Yes.
So we're all here doing something in her honor, in her and divine emissary work. And so that's how I'm holding it now, particularly since the plant medicine, because so much of the plant medicine comes from the great mother through the great mother. So the voice, everything of me is how, well, everything in my mind comes from the feminine. So is there anything that does not come from the mother? So I am a manifestation of the mother. So, yeah. And this voice is, I think, a big part of it because it's communication and it's how we keep things going. We communicate with each other. We coo to each other. I was in a ceremony recently, an ayahuasca ceremony in Costa Rica. And when the medicine took, the first sound that my friend who was there, one of my friends who was there, was remarking to me that I did was something my great grandmother always would do. And we all understand it. At least I know Black people understand it, but she did. And so the first thing I did was, and the other people that knew that just laughed. But to me, it's not just words. It's also the, what are you doing, boy? You know, and so I realize I have those tones and sounds as well that I think how we're guided, how we are, you know, when I heard that, I knew something I wasn't supposed to be doing. And so there's so many things like that, the tones of, you know, all of those things, those tonal things, which I hear in African women throughout the diaspora, and many women who are not African, I hear those tones. And so apparently when the medicine hit, I came out with one of those tones feeling, what is going on here in this world I'm living in? And I just said, that to me also is the communication, the voice. It's all coming through this apparatus that is our communication device.
Yes. And, you know, you mentioned Capricorn and the goat earlier. One of the things that I have been told is that I have frog medicine as part of my totem. And the magic, the medicine of frog is partly the voice, is that it transforms with the voice. So if that's, you know, if that's part of your medicine, it's just so important to use it.
Right.
It's so important to know what you have. You know what I mean? The riches that you have been given.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and to accept them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Progress. Yeah.
Yes. And you know, when you've talked about your life and being moving to Oregon from Chicago, I mean, how many Black kids make that transition? I don't know. Maybe not many.
Well, it was only my brother and I in that high school. So there were certainly no other Black people in Ashland, Oregon at that time, except for me, my brother, and my cousin. So, yeah, it was quite a jump. But I want to say, so healing for me, because I want to make sure that I communicate that it had been quite a tumultuous time. My post Jim Crow parents and coming to redlining Chicago and what they had gone through and what they were going through, and a lot of it, they were self-medicating and trying to find their way to survive something that was very difficult. I didn't realize all that at the time, but their strife with one another, their strife in the world, that the jobs they were on, that was all being manifested in their weekend behavior, which was largely alcohol-induced and usually escalating into some sort of tumult. And so by the time I was a teenager, I was just, I couldn't do that anymore. But there had been so many traumatizing things that had occurred at that point. And Chicago being so segregated, the world was just, I was afraid of whiteness and going into white neighborhoods. And there was all kinds of thoughts and feelings and communications to me that I could not go to those neighborhoods, otherwise I would be killed. So Ashland was really healing because it's an all-white town. And I get there and those people are hugging and kissing me. And so for me to go from Chicago, where it was so, the fear, there was so much fear there, to this place where, I mean, they didn't have any Black people to cultivate racism with, so they just didn't have it. Not that I didn't get, they didn't say, that I didn't hear things that were horrible, you know, the word nigger or something like that happened, I think, once or twice. But they also were, they didn't know not to hug and kiss me and to embrace me and to celebrate my artistic expression. So it was really a big healing shift for me to move to those people in Ashland, Oregon, and decompress from that world of post-Jim Crow Black Chicago to this world of natural food and actors and dancers and art and loving, you know, hugging and loving. So it was a wonderful thing that I will always be grateful for, that those Ashlandites embraced my brother and I in such loving, beautiful ways. They began the healing for me, this healing path that I've been on since then.
So interesting. It's in Oregon that happened, you know? And right. Then here you are today, you know, part of the work that you do, use the tools of psychedelics or entheogenics, and, you know, Oregon is the, I don't know what it is.
Well, it's the first state that has decriminalized those things.
Okay, there you go. We can call it that. We can call it a leader too, though. It's not just decriminalized. It's like a lot of stuff is happening to break down prejudices and misconceptions about entheogenic psychedelics and medicines in Oregon. So you went to Ashland, landed in an arts community, got to develop this beautiful voice and the skills of an actor, and to become an exchange student to Japan. You know, thought you were going to become a diplomat. And I feel like you probably are a diplomat.
I do think I am. I just, when I realized I would be doing American foreign policy and not just this unifying United Nations things that I really wanted to do, I thought, I'm not going to become a diplomat. I don't want to exert American foreign policy in the world. But I have. I mean, and I think it was really interesting enough, the actors that showed me how to shapeshift into different places, to listen and be with the culture I was with. They're the ones that showed me how to do that, how to be in reaction, interaction, relationship, and bring my heart, my spirit, my soul to it. So I did go on to be a diplomat, but not just as I had, as it had been said to me a diplomat was when I was 17 years old. But now it's this broader thing that I have been doing in the world, and largely through this plant medicine world. This world of bringing people back to indigeneity, bringing people back to village. That is what has been happening for years now. Certainly when I met Maladuma, that is what he brought, that we are reconnecting everyone with the healing wisdom of Africa. And that is an indigenous wisdom. So
yes.
That's what I've been an ambassador of, at least for the past decade.
Yes, and I want to get there. Let me just ask you one question first. Have you ever heard of Binti, the novel Binti?
I have heard of it, but I haven't read it.
Yes. Please read it. Because the main character is a young, 17-ish young girl who becomes like this diplomat between worlds.
Oh, let me stop. I have read it. I have read that novel.
You remember? Yeah. And she's a harmonizer.
Yes. She's a harmonizer. Yeah, I did read it and I loved it.
Yes.
It was a trilogy.
And yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And the author's name is escaping me now. It's like Namede Neki.
Yeah. Neri Okudafor.
So I'm thinking of somebody else. Okay. Yes. Okudafor. Okay. Uh-huh. I will make sure to put it in the show notes.
NNEDI. That's the first name.
Okay.
Neri Okudafor.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah, I love those books.
Yes. I feel like that resonates with your story and the whole thing about the voice and, you know, mm-hmm. she was a harmonizer. And, mm-hmm. you know, what diplomats do is harmonize and you use mm-hmm. your voice, you know, you're mm-hmm. vibrationally harmonizing people. And medicines, what are they doing? They're altering our vibrations.
Mm-hmm. It's absolutely, it is about harmony. It is about, it's about harmony. It's about balance. It's about, you know, bringing dissonance into something that is balanced and harmonious. And to me, that is what diplomacy should be. That's not how we've been using it in this world, these world cultures. But yes, that's exactly what it is. And I'm so glad you associated me with that. I love her series of books. Actually, her first set of books were about a Kata witch, which is a young adult series. And it's also about West African indigenous practice. And how these young people, Harry Potter-like people, are coming into their witchdom. So Neri Okudafor has really been big. I'm so glad I had not even remembered Binti and how. Yeah, I think that one of the reasons it resonated for me so is that, yes, that is the way. That harmony, that harmonizing, figuring out what the harmonizing is key. And did I not hear my mother doing that from the time I came out of, probably before I came out of it? That's what she was doing. And so I am a product of this being who was using her voice to have magic in the world. And somehow that got passed to me in some way. So you've made a connection that I hadn't even made until this conversation. Thank you, Tree Woman.
You're so welcome. You're so welcome. That trilogy was so important to me. I think I got introduced to it in 2019, it might have been 2018, but mm-hmm. I just came back to it again and again. Mm-hmm. One of the things that happens with the main character, Binti, is that she changes as she encounters different cultures. Mm-hmm. She changes herself.
She does.
So she's still who she is, but, you know, all of a sudden now she's got tentacles that are blue. I mean, mm-hmm. So for everybody who doesn't know, it's like speculative fiction. You can call it science fiction. Mm-hmm. But she and she has to deal with complex feelings of loving and hating simultaneously. Mm-hmm. Someone who caused great loss, but who also she knew was operating from the constraints of his own culture. I mean, mm-hmm. I love it.
I do too, and I love the association you're making as we get into voice and harmony and that beautiful West African author who brought it to us in that. Brought it to my consciousness in that way. And how it links with the other West African cosmologies that have come into my life.
Well, and yeah. let's get there, please. I have been telling people, I'm so excited to talk to Tiger because he was a direct student of Dr. Maladoma Somme, who mm-hmm. Wrote The Healing Wisdom of Africa and many other
the
books.
The Spirit, yeah, Ritual.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I would love to hear for you, Tiger, how you practice indigenizing, how you work with bringing indigenous wisdoms, village ways into your life where you live in a modern urban center that's very mm-hmm. multicultural, multiracial. It's not predominantly African or predominantly Black people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and you're in the 21st century. So tell us how do you work with those things that you learned from Maladoma?
Can I give a little backstory of how I came to it? It feels like
yes.
That's important. Yeah. So I happened in college. I happened to live with Ghanaians, and my Black family actually had quite a reaction to that, asking me all kinds of narrow-minded questions around what it was like to live with these Africans. And so much of the ridiculous information we get in this culture, from Tarzan to all of those things, they were asking, and I realized there was so little that I had learned in all of my educational process. I hadn't learned a lot about Africa. So when I went to Africa, and because I was, I went to Ghana about 12 years ago, 10, 12 years ago, and I wanted to know what is actually the religion here, the spirituality here, what is the indigeneity here? And I went there on a program called AIDS for AIDS Africa. So I started to go to wards, different hospitals and wards, and I realized that the majority of the people in the AIDS wards were female-bodied people. And I asked the medical staff, well, where are the men? Because certainly the way that I held HIV and AIDS in this land was it was largely a male world of people who were suffering from that particular affliction or that disease. And there I saw only women, and I thought, well, that's pretty peculiar. And I said, where are the men? And they said, they all have gone back to their villages, we think. And I'm like, and what are they doing in their villages? And they said, well, we don't really know what they're doing in their villages. I'm like, how could you not know what they're doing in their villages? And at that moment, I realized their shame of taking up the indigenous ways. But also I realized how little I knew. At that point, I knew about all forms, many forms of Buddhism. I had studied the Baha'i. I had studied all religious science. I had studied so many different things. And I know nothing about African cosmologies. So I then became very curious to learn. Tell me, where is it? How can I learn this? So I came back from West Africa with that fervor. And as we know, the goddess, the universe provides, Maladoma Sumay came into my midst. And so I actually went to a family constellation conference because I had been introduced to that. And Maladoma was the keynote speaker. From there, I, yet again, like Ashlyn, we were maybe the two Black people at the Family Constellation Conference. So I asked him, will you be my mentor? And he said, you know, I had a feeling you were going to ask me that. And that is how the journey sort of began. And so he had his course called Indigenous African Shamanic Technologies, and I joined it. And that was about a 3-year process of going through the different rituals of that he was bringing to Burkina Faso. So he had already separated from his first wife, Sabonfu, at that time, but she was also here in the Bay Area where I live, and she was working largely at Spirit Rock doing the grief ceremony. So they had split out the rituals where she was largely handling the grief part and he was largely handling the other rudimentary elemental rituals, including an ancestral ritual. So that was how I began to learn. And I really wanted to know because I realized that so many of us were distanced from our African selves. Certainly those of us of the New World and the African diaspora, we were just so distanced. So I needed to know. I knew about all of these other cosmologies and religious ways, but I didn't know ours. I didn't know the one that was indigenous to my ancestors. So I began to learn. And in that process, Maladoma looked at me and my configuration and referred to me as a gatekeeper, which in many ways is the multi-spirit, at least two spirit, that I think is even in this case more than one, more than two spirits. And the way that the gatekeepers hold the balance, that's what we actually do for the village, for the community. And he said he came to the Bay Area and he said, there's so many gatekeepers here, speaking about the gay community. And he says, but they're not doing the gatekeeper work. They're doing they're doing something else. They seem to be focused on the sexual part of their lives, not the spiritual part. And that's when I began to really hold, oh, this configuration is a spiritual configuration. And as he pointed out, so many of us were doing helpful and healing jobs or something always related to the healing of the community, the fixing, the uplifting of the community. He says that's what gatekeepers do in Africa. They look at what the people in the village are doing, the struggles they're having, and they assist in elevating and or bringing balance. And that's what I recognize that I do, who I am, and that I'd always been in some health and healing wellness profession in some way, or teaching, guiding in some way. And so I realized, oh, I guess I am exactly what you're telling me that I'm configured to be, because I am drawn to doing that sort of work. And then that led me to this plant medicine world. So I certainly have been continuing to be in the Dogara traditions and working with them. And I'm actually going to go to Burkina Faso this year to continue some of that work. Yeah. And that's, isn't that a new tidbit? But I found myself getting interested in the Mazatec and this Mesoamerican group of people where the woman Maria Sabina in the 50s was discovered, and interested in her story and reintroducing this hemisphere, but not introduced, she had it, but introducing Americans to the mushroom. And what has happened since then? And then somehow I found myself learning from people who were attached to the Maria Sabina tradition and learning about that indigenous practice. So it started to, and there, of course, there's always overlap with these indigenous practices. And so I began to see, but I realized that was my next step. There were medicines through rituals and ancestor work, which is largely what I did with the Dogara people. And then there is work to help us to start to open the field, open the way in which we can hold more in our consciousnesses. And that's what was coming in through the medicines. So now it's all sort of combining in me and something that I'm becoming, which is an amalgam of these indigenous wisdoms.
Yeah.
I hope I answered your question.
You did. As you elevate into the role of elder and mentor.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And we talked about Binti earlier, how she... and that diplomatic role, harmonizing role, taking on elements, she herself mm-hmm. was changed.
Yes.
And you in this role, having received this training and this initiation from Dr. Patrice Malero-Masome mm-hmm. and the Dogara traditions, mm-hmm. combined with the work that you've been doing with Mushroom and with mm-hmm. The Elder Maria mm-hmm. lineage. You mm-hmm. know, so here you are now.
Here I am.
As an elder and a mentor for us, for mm-hmm. those of us who are ready to, you know, work with you. Do you know what I'm trying to say? Who are ready to, who can hear you, who are mm-hmm. resonating with you.
Absolutely. That's, now I'm seeing what the voice was for, how to use the voice in a way that invites and not lord over, how to do all of these practices in a way that models how we honor the ancestors, how we honor those who've come before us, how we honor those practices and medicines that are here on this earth, that are here to help us to grow, flourish, evolve.
Yes.
All of that is what's been coming into me of late. As well, I'm going to, you know, I have to mention something that, you know, when I was with Maladoma and I was doing my ancestralization, I had I brought all the pictures of all of my relatives, and I had them on the ancestor altar, and I brought some tobacco to represent my Native American ancestors, which my black people's acknowledge our Native American ancestry. But I saw all of our different colors, and I said, I went to Maladoma as I felt something come up, and I said, Maladoma, I am leaving out some ancestors here, I think. And I think I'm leaving them out because I'm holding them as reprehensible. And he said, and now, brother, your work has truly begun. And from that time, you know, this last name that we were talking about before is Blair. And I came to realize that Blair wasn't just a slaveholder's name that was given to me. I was actually a descendant of that slaveholder. And that's a Scotch-Irish ancestry. And what just happened in the past, I think it's a year or so, is I was asking someone who was helping me, a guide who was helping me, a reader, about this ancestry, and still holding that sort of way in which males came and raped African women, and that's how I came to be. And I said, so are these my ancestors, and is this what I have to embrace as a part of me as well? And she says, well, yeah, that's a part of it, but curiously enough, that isn't what I'm largely seeing here. What I'm largely seeing here are the Irish witches that are over you, and you are falling in line, you are following in the line of those witches. So as they were doing herbs and using plants, that's what you're doing. I feel them more over you. And I realized I'd never thought of the mothers of the colonizers, the slaveholders, and the aunts and the grandmothers. I had only thought of those men. And she's like, no, they came from this pantheon of witches. And so now I have been able to embrace that as a part. So I have the native, I have the African, and I have now these Irish witches. So all of these cosmologies and all indigenous cosmologies are coming together within me. So, and harmonizing, as you said, as the Binti analogy comes again, that the harmony of all of those things together are here within me.
So we're going to take a break here from our sponsor, and then we're going to come back and wrap up. We will have Tiger Blair on again because, you know, we got a lot to talk about, but let's take a break.
Hey, today's episode is sponsored by DrAmandaKemp.com, my business. And I want to invite you to download a free gift. I've put together something called the 5 signs it's time to slow down your social justice or your racial justice. And basically, it's a little sheet so that you can check and see, do I need to slow down what I'm doing? And what you can do instead. So go ahead over to DrAmandaKemp.com, to my website, and you will see an option to download that cheat sheet for 5 signs it's time to slow down your racial justice or your social justice. Thanks for listening.
So, Tiger, thank you so much. And to wrap up the interview, I wonder if you could tell us how you recommend, or from your own self, how you've learned to hold your African, Irish, indigenous heritages in a way, even though bad things came through those lines, there was trauma, there was rape, there was all kinds of things, but somehow you seem to be holding them in a harmonious way. So give us some help for how we could do that.
Well, I mean, it's about understanding that something happened to all of us, something happened to everyone, and there's shadow manifestations for that, what has happened. And the key thing that I know to do is to ask what happened before I go into my trauma response of it. And yes, there's trauma response from the rapes of African women that have resulted in me. There's trauma response in them and me and all of us. There's trauma responses in them from having done it. What Maladoma said to me, When I said, and I'm holding some of them as reprehensible, as he said, I want you to know, as when they move into the ancestor realm, they are no longer simply what they were on these embodiments of this plane. They are the fullness of who they are. And at this point, they are here to help us as much as we call on them and allow them to help us to move into the next place. So when I began to hold that in my consciousness, that they were not actually these sort of racist archetypes that I was holding, or violent archetypes if they were in something other than a white body, when I began to say, oh, they're more than that. And now they want to help because they couldn't do the help when they were there, when they were here. Now they're able to help. So now as I feel the pantheon of my ancestors helping me in all of their different manifestations, that's what I'm holding, that they're not limited to these earthbound primal lives now. They are full spirits that can now assist as we move and find out how we're evolving to the next place. So as I hold all of those different ancestors from, and there are some that are Chinese, there are some that are South Asian, there are some that are Irish, there are some that are African, some that are Native of what we call native peoples of these lands. All of that's in. And so now, how are they all assisting me to do the work of healing the world, the work of evolving us to the next space? Let that come through my voice. Let me not look at them as you are reprehensible, but look at them as, what is it that you want me to say through my voice that is now knitting us together? How do I do that? And I just have to let that impress come through.
Wow. So you're like rich, in other words.
That, yes, there's, you know, we look at wealth in a certain way in these Western capitalist worlds. But yes, what's happened for me is rich in spirit and my spiritual being, and recognizing that these ancestors of all of their different types, and that somehow it's all gotten into me. So all of the Asian, African, Native, all of it's here in me. And so European. So if all that's here, then I'm modeling the coming together. I am. You be the coming together, even though someone's relegating me to a particular race. What I know is I am all of those things. And so how do I honor and show the honor of all of those things and let all of those ancestors help me when I get to a place of saying, you are reprehensible. You, Donald Trump, are reprehensible. How do I then ask the question, what happened? As opposed to just standing in judgment. That isn't our role as gatekeepers, as healers. It's to say what happened and then figure out where is the balance. How do I help to promote the balance?
Wow. Thank you so much, Tiger. Thank you, Tiger. Is there anything that, if people want to find out more about you, where should they go? If they want to follow you or learn more from you?
Right. What I learned is that the way to easily more reach, and as I'm at this big conference, this psychedelic conference now, is most people are using their LinkedIn. And so I am in LinkedIn under my name. So you can find me there. And that's a way that you can continue to learn more work. There is a new organization and website I'm building, which is going to be called Creative Ties. And so Creative Ties will also link you in to some of the bigger work that I'm thinking of doing. So, but in the immediate, one can go to LinkedIn to find me. And you might find me there under Ty as opposed to Tiger. But I think I'll go in, as I've said this now, and change it to Tiger so that you will find me there under Tiger Blair and LinkedIn. And that's how you can reach me.
Thank you, Tiger Blair. Thank you. Thank your lineages. Thank you for your wisdom and your courage and your surrender to the goddess and to the divine mothers. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, divine mother. Tree woman. Thank you for having me here. Thank you, Lori, for also embracing me as I'm here. And I guess it all is it's all about love. And what I realized, tree woman, is that we developed a love bond. So that's what I'm trying to do as I interact with everyone. What is the love bond that's here? And not trying to move away from that or think that that's too mushy. Just be in the love bond. That's what we're to do. And so that's what I'm doing my best to keep doing wherever I am, being the love.
Beautiful.
Wow. You heard it here. Be in the love bond. That is what Tiger feels called to do. And that's what he's inviting us all to do. Be in the love bond. We don't have to get it all right and we don't have to be wrong. We could surrender to not knowing what we don't know and instead sinking back down into a love bond. Okay, so clearly we need to have Tiger back on here again so we can talk more about plant medicines and healing generational trauma and racial trauma and, you know, patriarchy and also talk more about the wisdom of the divine mother as expressed through Earth Mama. So much goodness there. If you like what you heard today, please, please definitely leave us a review. Give us some stars wherever you listen to podcasts. Please shout us out on social media. You can just tag at Dr. Amanda Kemp on Facebook or Instagram or LinkedIn. I would love to know what you think about this episode. And
I'm grateful to you for listening and look forward to seeing you when we next come together. Peace.